Hi, it's Sveta M. Ben, the world's number one impact investing expert. I have been educating thousands of people on the topic, how can you use finance as a force for good?
And I have been helping hundreds of entrepreneurs all around the world to set up, run, and establish their companies and businesses.
Do you even know what is impact investing? And how can you get engaged in that?
Did you know that in the coming years, we are going to lose 26 trillion of our GDP due to the climate change? But on the other hand, are you also aware of all the opportunities that the sector has to offer?
Are you aware of changing policies and businesses which already impact every little part of your life?
To have the answer to all these questions, come and join us at Swiss Impact with Banerjee's on every Friday afternoon, 3 o'clock Swiss time, starting from 15 January.
We will be interviewing thought leaders, world leaders, policymakers, investors, businesses, which are already engaged in this sector. So, see you on Friday.
See you on Friday. Good morning, afternoon, and evening to everyone, and especially to our viewers for Far East. Good night.
Hi, everyone. Welcome all to our first episode at Swiss Impact with the Banerjees, meaning with Ben and myself, Svetlana. Welcome, everyone.
We decided to start this program as a part of our two visions, which we had since a very, very long time. One is to raise the awareness of the existential threats we are facing today and our world, our nature, our surrounding, and especially the future of our children. And I remember Benjamin Franklin once also said, every problem is an opportunity in itself. It's an opportunity in disguise. So to make our audience aware of the massive opportunities that this world is offering and what is happening around the world, with each of us can act and support.
Let me first reveal the disguise. I'm wearing the glasses today, not because I'm in Hawaii and it's sun shining here in Switzerland. Vice versa, we have a snowfall, but I have a little problem with an eye, and I don't want to scare you guys with my eyes at the first show. So hope to see you in person with my eyes on the second one. And to add on that, so the second part of our vision is actually to teach and educate people all around the world on how to use business and finance to become a part of the solution and not the problem. For this, I have already taught more than thousands of professionals and entrepreneurs with setting up their businesses to solve or act at one or several sustainable development goals. So they can call themselves impact businesses. And this means that they have doors opened to impact investors and financial resources. So to help to transform, we do, of course, also coaching and trainings occasionally for free. And one of them will take place on the 9th of February this year, where you are all invited.
And I, of course, support the businesses with structuring, business development, fundraising, and especially how to write your documentation, which is good for impact investors. The reason why I'm doing it is because I have the experience of setting up companies in Netherlands, in Hungary, in Switzerland, in United Kingdom, all over the Europe. And I have experienced the Murphy's Law. That means going through all the problems that every startup and newcomers have. So today we here stand with our own family show, where we will be interviewing people from all around the world.
But let's first define what is actually impact investing. Because, of course, Ben knows what it is. Some people in the audience know what's impact investing, but not everyone. So I will just quickly explain what actually we are talking about. So impact investments are investments into social enterprises which have an underlying mission to solve one or several challenges which the world is facing. And at the same time, we create social and environmental return, and of course, also financial return. This is why it's not philanthropy. It is an investment. And it's important to understand that those companies are scalable, they are innovative, because how otherwise you can achieve both financial return and, what is more important, social and environmental returns. So here we are trying to bring impact investing further to the audience, to everyone around the planet. And this is one of our missions, to make impact investing the new normal, that finance can be the force for good. But let me ask Ben, why it's so important, impact investing?
Oh, there are many reasons. I can go into a lot of them. But today, just to keep, because we have limited time, I'll focus on the risk. So if you look, there are two major risks we are facing now. One is the fossil fuel industry. So I'm talking about the risk for the investors. So for the fossil fuel industry, we all know that the demand has gone down and is going to go down further and further, especially with the new policies and the new rules and regulations kicking in. So that means soon, not only fossil fuel industries, but also all the industries which are associated with it, like the airlines, ships, planes, trucks, they are all going to lose their value significantly. So in other words, they're all going to end up as stranded assets. This is not only a problem and a threat for investors, it's also a major threat for businesses. The second issue is, I don't know if you guys have read, it was recently on a report, that in the coming years, the world GDP is going to lose $26 trillion because of climate change. So these are the threats we are facing. And you all have now noticed, we are all living under the COVID situation, how much a little change in the nature can impact our life. 1 year ago, 1.5 years ago, this TV show would not have been possible, nor could we have done the program, nor could anybody have attended it.
By the way, you've seen just the slide very quickly about this free event on education for entrepreneurs of the future.
So, I'll just tell you how I started. So I started when I was at the university in Holland. There was a small organization we started. It was called India Care Group. So we were supporting 14 schools in India, which was for invalid and for street children and invalid children. That's where we started. So 25, 30 years, I went through the whole process of coming from charity, aid, to bioenergy, macrofinancing, renewable energy. And today, impact investment nearly covers or touches every sector you can think about. But I focus mainly on, at this moment today, I would go, because of also our guests, 2 points. One is the climate change and the loss of biodiversity. Recently, I read Professor Blumenstein from the Institute of the Environment and Sustainability from California University. He mentioned many people can't certainly recognize it, but they don't understand the urgency. Or maybe they recognize it, but they don't want to take the individual sacrifice. The issue is that we have a time gap between ecological deterioration and socioeconomic impact. And that's why people are having a difficulty. By people, I mean especially the political leaderships or the decision makers are having the difficulty in understanding the seriousness and the urgency of the problem. Another professor I can quote is Professor Bradshaw from Flinders University in Australia, who mentioned, in fact, the scale of the threat to the biosphere and to all life form is so great that even for well-informed experts, it's very hard to grasp at this moment. So that's why today we brought two people who not only understand the urgency, but are also acting on it.
Yeah, but before we start our journey around the world, and our journey today starts with the Arctic, the lungs of our planet, who doesn't know, I'd like to quickly say, very quickly, my story. And some of you know that I'm an ex-banker and my career started in financial sector. And I was privileged to reach the center of Switzerland, Paradeplatz, and work for a sustainable private bank. However, unfortunately, I've seen that inside of the bank, we face the problems which we also face outside of the world. People don't know what is impact investing. People have no opportunities to get education on that. And of course, it's very difficult to invest in those because the minimum investment size is usually $250,000. So I left the bank, and the trigger point was actually back to financial crisis in 2008 when I was still studying. And my dream was, how can we do something good with finance? And that any financial person, any banker can say with pride, hey, I'm a banker, and not just providing kind of excusing, oh, I'm a banker, but actually I do something good on the side. So my mission here is also to bring back the pride to all people in finance because their skills are desperately needed in all projects around the world which create positive social and environmental impacts. So here we are at our TV, and I'm thrilled to start it with our first guest, Rishi and Parvati from Canada. So let's welcome them to our TV show. Hello, Rishi from Canada. Yes, hi. Hi, Parvati.
Hello.
Welcome. How are you guys feeling today? Is it also snowy like in Switzerland, or how is it there?
Very little snow, and that's partly why we're on your show.
Sounds great. Would you guys shortly introduce yourself? And I guess we start with the lady.
Oh, thank you. My name is Parvati, and I'm a musical artist and the founder and CEO of Parvati Foundation, an international nonprofit dedicated to a healthy world. And our first order of business is MAPS, the Marine Arctic Peace Sanctuary, to protect all life on Earth.
That was brief. Rishi, Now it's your turn.
I'll also be very brief. I'm a founder of Parvati Foundation, a record executive. I've had the privilege of working with some of the most, alongside some of the biggest artists in the music industry. And I serve as a marketing consultant for Parvati Foundation.
That's great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Oh, and I heard you guys had a video.
You know what?
Which will tell us about MAPS.
Yeah, let's do that. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Let's now.
It's 2020. We have a big problem. People in the Amazon and on the American West Coast have been watching their world literally burn away. Millions across Africa and Asia are homeless, their hopes and dreams swallowed by floods. Unrelenting heat waves and pollution will claim over 4 million lives globally by the end of this year. Close to a third of our world is living with food shortage, while as many as 2 billion people don't have enough water. Meanwhile, a pandemic that leaves millions gasping for breath warns us that we must change our ways. To survive, we need to act now, and it starts at the top. I and an all-volunteer group worldwide are spearheading MAPS, the Marine Arctic Peace Sanctuary, the largest peace park in history. It safeguards our global life support system, the Arctic Ocean, to ensure everyone can have food, water, shelter, peace, and stability. The following may sound like fiction, but it's not. I was about to go on a musical tour through Asia, but kept having a dream of lying on ice while a great blue whale swam below. I canceled my tour, and 3 weeks later I was on my way to the North.
Hi, my name is Parvati. I'm a musical artist, yogini, activist, and author with a deep love for our planet. The Arctic Ocean is the Earth's air conditioner that ensures balanced weather globally, so we have the food and resources we all need to survive. But today, it's under threat as never before, as corporations and governments seek to profit off its melt. MAPS, the Marine Arctic Peace Sanctuary, is an effective and immediate response. It protects the entire Arctic Ocean north of the Arctic Circle as the largest preservation area in history. MAPS supports a global shift to sustainable energy and moves us from short-term gain to long-term good. With a single initiative, MAPS supports almost every UN Sustainable Development Goal. MAPS has become an unstoppable global movement with charities in the US, Canada, and Europe, international law in the making, 48 coalition partners, representation in 24 countries, growing youth initiatives, and multiple inspiring campaigns unfolding. We stand at a pivotal moment in human history. Together, we can transform the Earth's most vulnerable ocean into our greatest strength and literally save the world. The ice isn't waiting, and neither can we. Be part of the MAPS movement. Please sign and share the MAPS petition today at parvati.org for a healthy and safe tomorrow.
All right, we are back here. That was impressive, but I think we need some clarification for the audience. So could you maybe explain us, Rishi or Parvati, what is MAPS?
Sure. MAPS is basically two things. It's the largest marine protected area ever, and it's also the necessary global pivot in our thinking to sustain it. Because we know that a piece of paper, you know, doesn't necessarily make the change, but it's the will and the hearts of people, the cool minds, the warm hearts of people that make the change. So MAPS, through MAPS, the Arctic Ocean is off limits to all forms of exploitation. And as such, MAPS safeguards our homes from, you know, floods, and it safeguards our food supplies, water supplies. It provides global immunity, economic balance, social stability, and world peace. So that's what MAPS is in a nutshell. It really is important that people understand that, you know, when we protect the Arctic Ocean, the sea ice of the Arctic Ocean, we're protecting the entire world, because the Arctic sea ice is our world's air conditioning system. So it ensures we have the food and water we all need to survive, whether you live in Switzerland, in Canada, or in Africa, anywhere in the world.
But isn't the Arctic sea ice melting because of the global warming? So only the effect is not limited to MAPS, but it is limited to whole. So how are you planning to protect the Arctic sea ice without acting against the global warming?
Well, it's that global warming is caused by our actions, right? Yep. So we need to be changed. That's why I mentioned that it's not just protecting an area, a geographical area, but it's creating the necessary global pivot in our thinking to sustain it. And that means that we need to act in an interconnected manner, aware that whatever we think, whatever we do, wherever we are affecting all life on Earth. And we can see that so vividly, you know, in the last year that we've had together, you know, facing COVID. So that's what the Arctic ice is telling us, is that, you know, whether you drive an SUV, you know, in Florida, or, you know, you're air conditioning your home in Africa, you're still affecting the ice in the Arctic. And that's then in turn melting it. And that's then in turn causing a greater, it's called a death spiral, actually, you know, so it's
exactly.
Yeah,
because I was reading, it was last week or something, again, a very big part of ice, nearly as big as New Zealand or something, broke apart.
That's right. So it's melting. It's melting exponentially fast. In fact, the Arctic ice in general is melting at a rate of 14,000 tons every second. And that's actually the speed at the foundation. That's one of our things, that we need to work faster than 14,000 tons per second. It's very quick, you know, and it's so, yeah. So thank you for the opportunity to be here and talk about it, because, you know, our policy is that people have the right to know, so that they can choose, you know, choose healthy action that will be of benefit to all life.
But are you also defining from MAPS what are the healthy actions?
Absolutely. I mean, we have a policy that it's cool minds, warm hearts, right? Cool minds, warm hearts. When we learn to act from a place of every thought will eventually influence our actions. And therefore, our actions need to be based on the reality that we're all interconnected. So cool mind, warm hearts. And it's everything. It's not just, you know, let's, you know, protect the Arctic sea ice. We need to really think about what we're doing today. You know, are we contributing to carbon emissions? And in what way are we reducing that? You know, that's part of the whole picture of MAPS. It's that heat, that agitated heat in our minds that cause us to act in greedy ways, you know, and that greed will then generate more heat on the planet, more agitation, and we create more consumption, you know, and that never-ending kind of taking that COVID is showing us. It's like taking, you know, it's taking our breath. You know, this is that we're, so really we're looking for an antidote for that. And then that comes
from within us and call alchemize each one of us. Incredible power for transformation. And we need to activate that within and then act from a place of interconnection.
But are you also fighting it legally? For example, you know that last week or 2 weeks ago, Trump gave up a lot of protected area in the Alaska for exploration, oil exploitation, which was a protected, which was one of the world's or maybe the world's biggest protected area. Yeah, are you also taking legal steps against that?
Absolutely. Not. I mean, what we've done is we've created a treaty, a legal document that basically protects the area. It's an addendum to the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, and it protects the Arctic Ocean. So it's a legal document for world leaders to sign, heads of state to sign.
Okay. Guys, how did you come to this idea at all? Because I know there is an interesting story behind. Can you share it?
It's one where, you know, the ultimate truth is that this arose through listening. I'm a musical artist and a meditator, and I listen. And I believe that the intelligence of nature is available to everyone, you know, as long as we listen. So I was listening, and I started having actually a recurring dream of lying on ice while a great blue whale was swimming below. And so I would go and meditate, and then what is this? And finally it came very clear to me that I needed to go to the North Pole to sing, to use the voice that I have as a musical artist, to sing and give voice to the melting Arctic ice. And it's a beautiful story. I was greeted by two elders who said to me, "Oh, you're the one," Inuit elders who said to me, "You're the one who is coming to do healing for the planet." And I was like, "What's going on?" This is like a remote village in the high Canadian Arctic. And they said, "Yes, we knew you were coming. The whale told us." So it's just an indication of, you know, the beginning of MAPS and Parvati Foundation is based on listening and acting from that listening based on our interconnection. And that story of the whale is so powerful because it shows that in listening, we remember we are interconnected and just extraordinary things can happen. You know, I really believe that nature is sort of waiting for us to basically say yes. Yes. And then all this convergence of energy comes to support change. And that's what we're seeing at the foundation. It's really, really extraordinary and beautiful.
That's amazing story. Thanks, Parvati, for sharing. And I just can confirm that really everything is interconnected. I meditate as well. And finance is connected with yoga as well, because we need a consciousness shift in order a big change in finance to happen. So I truly believe that we are all interconnected, and to achieve the big change, people need to realize that they can't be business without impact. And all future businesses must align their actions towards financial, social, and environmental impacts in order to sustain in the future. Otherwise, all businesses will fail.
You know what? On that, and that's a very good note for all business and for just the way that we can respond very quickly. So when Parvati came to me and said, "I need to go to the North Pole. I need to sing and raise awareness of the melting polar ice," she had a song on radio across Asia and had booked out her tour, her musical tour across Asia at that time. So when she came to me and said, "I need to go to the North Pole, I need to do this, and we need to do this work," we didn't know that the foundation was coming at that time, but this was the impetus to move. As a musical artist manager, my job is to serve the creative flow. I might not necessarily understand, and while certain things might seem like obstacles, they're usually opportunities to present themselves and ways to solve problems in new ways. So very quickly we pivoted and went up there and saw for ourselves. Now when Parvati was greeted by these Inuit elder women that were listening to nature in the same way and hearing the same message, that was a moment for me that changed my life completely, to the point where I was like, oh, there is a bigger picture going on. But my point to finance people is that we can change very, very quickly, because when we came back, we discovered that there was seismic testing was about to happen in Canada's Arctic. And we rallied some friends together and just said, we're going to make this change and stop this. We didn't know that it was going to turn into this international organization that would be creating the world's largest protected area in history. We just knew that the right thing to do at that moment was to protect an area of the planet from seismic testing. And certainly that would have impacted whales and all of the all of the life. And so that was the beginning of how MAPS really started. And once, as Parvati has said in the past, once we started and succeeded with creating this little area, which was a big win for most people, we were like, got to go further. Parvati said,
people think, Rishi, are you crazy guys or something like that? How did you overcome those comments?
Yeah, I mean, as a musical performer, this is my policy. You know, in every room, there's somebody who's going to love you, somebody who's going to hate you, and somebody who doesn't care. So you have to do what feels right within your core. So yeah, of course, it seems crazy to go ahead as regular citizens to write a treaty that's going to change international law. You know, but it's somebody's got to do it. And so we just got busy and did it because we're just listening. It's just that we heard the call. And I think that call is available to everyone in the world. You know, there's nothing special about us. We just said yes. And so everybody can say yes. It's available.
Yeah. I love that. Somebody's going to do it. Exactly. Somebody's going to do it. Yeah. Why not us? Right. Perfect. Yeah.
I think a lot of people can lose a lot of energy and a lot of time in thinking like, well, you know, what about those guys? Those guys should be doing it and they're not doing it. And oh my gosh, it's not going to change. They're not doing it. And then you lose so much energy. You don't actually get on and just be the change. You know, it's, you've got to really take that initiative. And absolutely, it exists in the financial world as well. I mean, there's no investment that does not affect all life everywhere. There's no such thing as like an island. You know, we're all parts of an interwoven fabric. So yes, the financial world is radically changing quickly, and it has to. You know, I even say that it has to go beyond sustainability to interconnection. You know, because the sustainability model still, to some extent, is based on we're going to have this right life as normal, this life as normal, and then we'll have the sustainability component, you know, but that's based on divisive thinking. It's based on disconnection. But whereas if we look at that, literally everything that we're doing has to be good for not only myself, not only for my friends, but for all life everywhere. That's the revolution we need.
And with the word revolution, I thought about it. It's a very controversial idea. It's basically not from me. It came from my elder son. He said it's a time that many of us, and I think many of the young people and the children are thinking, that we should come and stand up and fight to protect the nature and the environment, because the people are not doing it. And especially they are talking about national boundaries. For example, Brazil government should not be responsible for the Amazon. The whole humanity, the whole world, everybody should be responsible for the Amazon.
Yeah, and to me, it's not a fight, it's a yes. And that's what gives me energy, because I think that when you start fighting something, you're in an againstness and you're actually, again, losing energy. Whereas if we keep saying yes to this, as you so wisely said, you know, Ben, at the beginning with Ben Franklin's quote, you know, it's an opportunity. And the revolution to me is a evolving, like it's a revolution. We're evolving in a new way into a new level. And so if we stay with that positivity, if we stay with that effervescence, you know, that luminosity, it actually is the energy of nature. Like nature is extraordinarily resourceful, you know, and we keep getting in the way. So we get out of the way and keep allowing nature to show us, you know, the tremendous capacity for nature to heal itself, to regenerate. You know, we're busy kind of worrying about whether it is or not, but it's like, and getting in the way. So let's get out of the way. That's what MAPS does, allows the Arctic sea ice to have a chance, you know, and that's really, we need to let nature have its voice.
Digging a little bit deeper, or Rishi, sorry, you wanted to say something, please.
Yeah, I was just going to add a little bit to that. I think also, you know, there's an incentive with MAPS for people who are just, Okay, ROI. And if some of the audience here are impact investors, so they're in microfinance for agriculture, if they're in areas of renewable space. So we're supporting all of that. By taking Arctic oil off the books, off the table, that means renewable scale faster. The actual valuation model, based on the way that we value business right now, increases the opportunity for ROI much faster. So we pivot to renewables faster by bringing supply and demand closer together. We take Arctic shipping off of the table because if people are saying, well, this is a quicker way to get the goods and services over at a cheaper price, and let's just say it's going to come over from one part of the world to another to keep prices of retail goods down, for how long? For a year or two, until all of a sudden there's nothing left. So that's not a sustainable model. So MAPS does all of that. It brings it all together, and that's part of that next step in sustainability to interconnection.
No, no, I mean, that's very true, because if you look at the positive side of the news, when Trump put the land in Alaska for auction, open for auction, no oil company bid on it, not even ExxonMobil. They are anyway hit very negatively, and they are also now apparently focusing very strongly on renewable. Nobody invested in it. Nobody went for that land. It's only a few people in Alaska who locally bought that, who made that choice in the auction.
Yeah, I mean, shipping through the Arctic, for example, is one of the things that we say is that it's an investment in mass destruction. You know, like it's the it might be the quickest route across the top of the globe, but it's the quickest route to mass extinction. So
And what you, Parvati, said is very correct, but if you look at it statistically, it doesn't really make much difference because the Chinese and the Russians, they want to do it. They want to ship through, but it just makes a different minuscule difference of less than 3 or 4% on their traveling time. So it makes absolutely no sense to do that. They're just looking into it because of the global warming. They're thinking, oh, great, the ice is gone. We can ship much easier, but it makes not much logical sense.
At every level, you know, at every level. So you're taking even at a practical level, but even at a sub-practical level in terms of like, if we do that, we don't have the air conditioner that makes sure we have the food and the water we all need to survive. So you might get your you know, you might get your Prada, whatever, or whatever the brand is, whatever, you know, kind of shipping over there faster or by a few, you know, minutes or whatever it is. But then, you know, there's nobody left on earth to actually enjoy those goods because we've all died. So,
Exactly. That's exactly the point.
To prevent them, and as I said, like digging a little bit deeper in MAPS, right? So I know that you need 99 countries to sign the petition in order to create the peace in Arctic.
Yeah, so it's a treaty. We have an online petition that anyone around the world can sign. That's for citizens around the world. And please make sure you do go, anybody who's listening, to Parvati.org and sign the petition, share it with your friends, let the world know. You know, it's really, it's about giving voice. MAPS is for everyone. It's about giving voice to the fact that we all can do something, share the petition, sign the petition, share the petition. But what we have above that is that this petition, it rallies people all over the world to notify their world leaders that they want their world leaders to sign the MAPS treaty, which is a legal document that only, you know, heads of state can sign. So yes, we need 99 of those world leaders to sign from the UN member states. And so far we have two, we have Cook Islands and Samoa.
You know, only two, why so few, Parvati? How comes? Everyone should understand the urgency and importance. Why only two?
Well, I mean, definitely everybody needs to understand that, you know, the oceans are essential for our survival. Like, I mean, they provide 50% of the oxygen we breathe. But it really is a question of education. So which is why our focus is a global education strategy. That's our primary focus, and why we're so grateful to have the opportunity to speak with you today. So, you know, and then there's the will. Once you know, you have to kind of have that switch on and want to do something about it. So now you know. Now you know. It's up to you to do something about it.
Also, I think there's something about the canary in the coal mine situation as well. So, and people don't realize the until it actually affects my own life, then that's when people start to act. And we saw that with the COVID situation. And that's why the Cook Islands and Samoa, it's sinking, literally sinking. And this is where we're seeing, and this has been one of the most beautiful parts of MAPS, is how it touches and it shows just by what it does that it's everybody's. You know, so the Cook Islands and Samoa, when they're seeing that they're going to lose the land, their whole population, they're going to do something about it. When we start seeing the same thing, we're going to start doing something about it. Mm-hmm. So if we can bring ourselves together to realize what's happening in different parts of the world is actually happening to us as well. There's a little story about if there's a fire on the first floor and the person on the 10th floor is like looking down and saying, that's not my problem, that's their problem. Got an issue. And so that's what we're doing right now. The building is on fire.
But Rishi, what do you see, like, how can we move or accelerate as the world leaders who can sign this 99 times, right? How can maybe people move the folks of countries to move their political leaders to move quicker? You know, it's the same in business, in financial world. In order to introduce impact investing to the banks, the head of the banks, the board must say, yes, we do it, and then it goes down, and then we do it. How do we act here when you face this problem?
So this is comes back to really the power in the people. People need to give voice. I mean, political leaders are representing the people, and so the people need to speak up and say, we need you to sign the MAPS treaty. You know, it really comes down to we can focus on what they're not doing or we can focus on what we can do, right? And so that's why it's really about each one of us becoming active, signing the petition and writing letters to your government. We also have, as I mentioned, GEM, the Global Education Strategy for MAPS, and it's a series of educational content that we're using through various mass media, you know, that is about really accelerating education. People, as I said, have the right to know. So that's really the most effective way. Make sure that people know.
May I add a couple of things to that?
Of course.
I think that, and those are very good points. The so as we have this, one of the other volunteers who is in England, he's the director of risk and compliance. And when he came on board, he fell in love with MAPS because he was just like, it's the right thing to do. And then he saw the global education strategy for MAPS. And that's when he truly fell in love. And so being part of the mass mainstream, at working in the music industry, change can happen very, very quickly. And we've never been in a more potent time where the power of modern media is so available to be able to catalyze change quickly to get people to do things. So the global education strategy is this magnificent, it's not like a typical, let's just say, activism type situation, which some people appreciate. It's through inspiration and by utilizing radio and television and the internet in so many different ways, with many media partners coming together for the sake of all life, we can catalyze change, because what we're doing is we're appealing to natural law. Natural law doesn't change. Human laws that we develop change. So we're working at changing the law at the international level by appealing to the international law of the natural law of the world, which is constant.
Takes a lot of courage to step out, really,
exactly.
Guys. Congratulations.
I hope you don't mind. I just want to jump out and take one question from the audience, who writes inspiring words from both Parvati and Rishi. which protection and role does MAPS recognize for indigenous people? Humankind rediscover in indigenous economies?
Sure, I can take that question. You know, since what happens in the Arctic Ocean, and thank you very much for your question. What happens in the effect of life planet, including, you know, devastating locust swarms in eastern Africa, falling shorelines and loss of homes in small Pacific island states, and the floods, you know, currently consuming many areas in India, Nepal, Bangladesh, and Myanmar. You know, we worked with NGOs, politicians, scientists, and indigenous and non-indigenous people from all over the world as we created the now complete MAPS treaty. So the MAPS petition has supported, has supporters basically from all of these fields, including members of Arctic Inuit communities and indigenous of the South Pacific and Americas. And so the fate really of the Arctic Ocean is critical for indigenous and all people worldwide. And I need to state that actually MAPS supports Article 25 of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. So MAPS really ensures that the Arctic Ocean remains what it always has been, a sanctuary and, you know, the air conditioner for our world. So, for example, MAPS allows local subsistence fishing and protects traditional fishing rights. So it's very much in harmony with that. So thank you for that question.
Okay. And just one more question is, what do you need from us, like normal people, to stop the oil exploration in the protected lands?
How can we support? It comes back to please go to parvati.org, parvati.org, sign the petition make sure you share the petition. We also encourage people to please write a letter to your government, to your world leader, at whatever country you're living in. We also, I haven't said this, but we are all volunteers. Like, this is an all-volunteer organization. We are all doing this out of our goodness of our hearts, out of our own pocket. And if you would like to lend a hand and be a volunteer as well, we are wide open to all, you know, skill sets and all supports. So please do contact us as well for that. So I think that's really the most straightforward way. We need to change international law. We need to have the treaty signatures from the world leaders on the MAPS treaty. And the way to do that is the petition.
Go to parvati.org and click on Take Action, and you'll see different ways in which you can participate, whether it's through the petition, learning to do presentations. Education is the biggest gift for all of us. And so there's a toolkit to help people to learn how to communicate, to be able to inspire, to expedite this movement forward. Letters to our world leaders. We have organizations to get involved as well.
So I see you guys both can talk right at the same time about it, but is it correct just to kind of structure it a bit more so people can become ambassador of MAPS? Is it right, once they get through your educational programs, then they can be ambassadors and create their, help you to grow the awareness about what you are doing? That's correct.
We have, so I mentioned, it's really four things. It's the petition, it's the letter writing signing. And I was going to mention when Rishi, you were speaking, that the letter writing signing, we have on our website sort of a template that can kind of get you started. So if you're not sure what to say, you just go to the Take Action page and it'll be there. We have also these kits that we've created for people to be able to give a presentation to their friends, family, schools, university, whatever, on MAPS. And then we have a program as well called the Interconnection Course. It's called the Interconnection Course. It's short. It's a 6-part course, and it just helps to train you on how to give the presentations as well, and to have the information that you need to be able to share with your community about MAPS. So yes, there is, you can become a MAPS ambassador. And we actually, what's really amazing is that one of our biggest constituencies, actually groups of volunteers, is in Africa, you know, because they're seeing their world radically change due to the melting Arctic sea ice, and they're taking action, and it's incredible to see the heart of these people. It's beautiful. The volunteers all over the world, it's just amazing. There is truly a lot of positivity and hope, and we need to allow that to fuel ourselves to take action as we come together.
Great. From the finance perspective, because you said you're all volunteers, but I guess financial resources would help to accelerate your actions and to scale it up. What do you need in terms of money?
What do we need in terms of money? We're actually looking for you could say it's an investment. I mean, it's philanthropic money at this point. Roll out the global location strategy. It's a comprehensive multimedia strategy to really infuse the world with this information. We call it to penetrate, permeate, and pervade, you know, the world with the information about maps. So it becomes the water cooler conversation. People have the right to know. And that's really what's fueling us right now. So we are looking for financial support for sure. I mean, it's what we need in order to scale at the speed required. You know, God bless all of the volunteers. You know, it's incredible. And right now we need that booster rocket as well to get us going at the speed required. And we'll still obviously be very volunteer driven.
And you mentioned countries far away. So for example, in people in countries like Malaysia or India or Bangladesh, who are also being impacted, but in my point of view, are they really aware of that they are being impacted because of the melting of the Arctics? Or do they think they are being impacted because the change is so gradual that they are not noticing at all? You know, the story of the boiling frogs.
So, I think it's not all that subtle. The impact is not all that subtle. You know,
I know, but do they see the connection with the Arctic?
That's the beauty. This is the beauty of the global education strategy for MAPS, is to make the global population aware that this is an international ecological and humanitarian crisis that's unfolding, and that we all play a part in doing this. Now, the fantastic thing is that what we are able to do through this is bring every single voice together. Ben, you have a lot of diplomatic relations around the world. Sveta, you work in the banking institutions. You can see that
I work, not anymore.
You know that there's a hierarchy in the way that we value certain things. So, unfortunately, we have to rebalance it. Every single life is of the same value. So all of the life in Bangladesh, all of the life in Malaysia, with all of the landslides, everything that's happening needs to be on equal footing to everything that's happening all over the world. The global education strategy for MAPS does that. MAPS equalizes by bringing a united voice to the most underrepresented voices in the world. And that, to me, is true impact investing.
Mm-hmm. But what are the main difficulties to raise this awareness? And like, what are the main difficulties for you guys? What do you face on the way?
I really think it's actually, I come back to this, it sounds maybe overly simplistic, but I mean, MAPS is very straightforward. It's really about making sure people know that this problem is happening. So it's about education and giving people the tools, which we have done, you know, making sure they know the tools are there for them to take very straightforward action. It's a very straightforward thing. So really right now, the we need that booster rocket to help us roll out the global education strategy for MAPS. The financial investment would be extremely helpful. So that's one of the things that we need to cross that chasm. But really, it's just about educating people.
Mm-hmm. Somebody asked, from how can media companies support your effort?
Reach out to me. We have a media coalition partnership, Rishi, RISHI at GARVATI.org. Get in touch. Happy to do so. This is all of us together.
Absolutely, because you know the crisis in the Arctic Ocean is just not adequately covered in the media. You know, it's mm-hmm. something that we really need to make sure people understand. I think one of the things is that people think that it's an Arctic problem. You know, and it's a global problem. People think it's an ecological problem. It's a humanitarian crisis.
Yep.
So there's, that's what I mean about the education. We need to really make those things clear. And that happens even when we reach out to, you know, for press, whatever, like, oh, that's the ecological thing. We've done a quota of that already, you know, that sort of thing. So it needs to be, people need to really understand the fullness of the problem, that it is a humanitarian crisis, and that it's something that what happens in the Arctic is literally affecting all life on Earth everywhere right now. And it's, it's a humanitarian crisis.
What I had, because I was a couple of weeks back speaking to a friend of mine, the Prime Minister of Holland, and he mentioned that don't focus too much on climate change, because this is a very small part of the whole picture. Climate change is basically a part of loss of biodiversity, inequality. It's quite a big picture. Do you also agree to that?
You know what our policy is that we actually don't get involved in climate conversation, because, you know, I'm not interested, and this is my policy actually as a CEO. I know we don't have time. We don't have time to debate whether it's happening or not. We know the ice is melting. You know, we know that it's causing cataclysmic, you know, disasters for all lives on Earth. We're losing lives daily. You know, I'm not interested in getting involved in that conversation. I'm interested in protecting life. So we generally stay away from that conversation and just get active and get busy with the fact that it's happening. We need to protect the Arctic sea ice now to protect all life.
And what do you find as the difficulties? Like Svetlana mentioned, I'll add to it. So what are the difficulties you face with getting people agreeing to it or signing the treaty?
You know, again, I'd say it really is just a question of manpower, which, you know, funding will help, and more volunteers coming as well, to get the word out. People need to get the word out. And partnerships with media companies, thank you to whoever volunteered for that. That would be great. Please do connect with Rishi and anybody listening to get in touch with us, to become a volunteer. If there are any financial support opportunities, please get in touch with us. We would appreciate that support as well. We're really investing in all life on Earth. You know, that's what this is about.
If I can, just on the difficulties. So countries and governments, we know that they want to let's just be honest, they want to invest in the melts. And so we can change that. It's almost like investing in cancer or COVID and see how much we can make it grow. There's some ignorance around that. And I don't mean that poorly, but we know that if we are in apathy, then people do not know and won't change. So let's just inspire people to make the change, and that we can do. And we've seen like the energy of COVID that is consuming, we cannot invest in it in that way. So we need to keep moving in this direction.
Yeah,
exactly. That was the point. I mean, we were always talking about it's going to cost so much money to affect the global warming and all that. But now a tiny virus wipes out 4% of the global GDP. And suddenly the money is there. And that also frustrates me a lot, that we are working on reactive, but not proactive.
That's why it's all about cool minds, warm hearts, you know. It's really about making sure that we act from a place of coolness and in our thinking, and that we have warm hearts that are based in interconnection. And then we can own that in it itself will inspire compassionate action. It's like we are, you know, when your right hand is burning, you immediately go and you touch it to soothe it. It's an instinctual thing. And because we live in it, we are generally disconnected from ourselves, each other, and the world. We've lost contact with the fact that this is burning, right? Mm-hmm. So that we've lost contact with that immediate kind of impulse to heal. So that's why we focus so much on making sure people are reconnecting to the fact that we are all interconnected. And then it becomes instinct. It's instinctual to reach out to, you know, whatever is happening in Bangladesh is affecting me. Like it really upsets. It's not okay that people are are starving and are dying because of what's happening all over the world, because of what's happening in the Arctic sea ice. That's not okay, because I can feel that one hand, next hand, and I can feel them. They are my brothers and my sisters, and I'm being called from within to take that action. And then that's just really, as I said at the beginning of this talk, about just having said yes. You know, I've listened, I've said yes. And now nature is moving through, I'm listening and I'm being guided. And that's the way it's going. It's a global, we're raising global awareness, you know, through listening to our inherent interconnection.
That's amazing. And I think it's also a question of responsibility, and not responsibility as you used to take responsibility, carry it. But if you break it in responsibility, so you are able to respond to things which are happening around you in a way that it's responsive to the nature, to the people around you, to your family, to your business, to anything what surrounds you. So you are response able to act accordingly in the world as a human. And being human is not a small thing.
It's not. You know, if you have the power to breathe, you have the power to make extraordinary change on this planet. It's really that basic for me. You can, if you have the power to breathe, you have the power to make positive change. And we need to be extremely careful. I actually just wrote a song that I'm producing called Undertow. And it's about this notion of sort of this negativity in the atmosphere that we can really pull us into this undertow. We need to watch out for that, because it's like, you know, well, it's all so bad and that guy next door is not doing anything. And then all this kind of na 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 na, and you all of a sudden you realize that you actually haven't taken any positive action for change today. You know, so it's like we need to not get caught up in the undertow. We need to stay focused on our interconnection. And then the compassionate action arises naturally, because it is the most natural thing as us as human beings to do, you know, to care for each other. It is the most effortless thing to do, actually, you know, because we're all interconnected. If you look at nature and the way it's moving, you know, it by nature, it's working to homeostasis. Like that's what it does, you know. And so we're built as, you know, these carbon beings to be living in homeostasis that way, you know. So we're entrained, we're harmonized with nature. We just need to line up to that. And when that happens, just miracles happen. And I can speak for that very firsthand, you know, like radical things have happened in my life that I would never have dreamt of, and energy and information and momentum, you know. So it's just about saying yes.
Yeah. You know, I was just thinking that if you look at babies, now I have one 5 months old, how they look at the world, everything is magic, everything is wonderful. Or you see the little kids, they're looking at plants and animals. By birth, they have the compassion, they have the love. And by the time they grow up, we teach them
to care about the profit.
Yeah, to lose it somewhere on the way.
For me, the experience with the whale was a really big piece, you know, because it felt like a kind of like a physiological repatterning to feel interconnected that way, you know. And the oceans, as I mentioned earlier, they provide 50% of the oxygen we breathe. So that's why I say, if you're breathing, you know, you're connected with nature. You're connected with the oceans, and you are therefore have the power to make positive change. And that really, it's up to you. You know, it's a power of choice. You have the power. Now everybody knows who's been listening to this call. You know, you have the power to make change. So you go for it, and we're wide open to co-create with you.
We have another question from the oil industry. It's very nicely formulated. Given that the oil is almost a sunset industry, which is great, what is a driver for oil exploration in such a hostile environment? What do you say?
I think this points to a problem really in our collective thinking, part of that undertow that I was talking about. You know, it's short-term greed, you know, looking out only for number one, instead of considering the collective good. And this is exactly what we're working to change through GEM, and what we've been speaking about here on this call. You know, that every decision that we make needs to be based on our inherent interconnection. So I think that's really what I would say to that.
And I would, from a business perspective, if you just look at it straight line from a balance sheet, you have oil and gas reserves that are on the books that falsely inflate the value, so that the oil and gas companies, even though they know they're not probably going to be using them, they're using them for lower interest rates to build oil rigs or wherever else, or other types of things that they're doing to move themselves forward, which unfortunately is not giving all of these impact startup renewable companies the chance that they need. So by doing what we're doing with MAPS, let's take Arctic oil and gas off the balance sheets and restabilize and do a proper valuation model so that these renewable businesses that everybody is hopefully all of the people who are watching are investing in, we can give them the proper valuation to help them to scale at the pace that that's required. So that might be one of the reasons that the oil and gas companies.
I'll add to what Rishi, you mentioned, as per the real figures, per year, we spend $45 billion on renewable energy. We spend $480 billion as subsidy on fossil fuel. And this $450 billion subsidy on fossil fuel creates a damage of $5 trillion per year. Unfortunately, the $487 billion and the $5 trillion is not known by the public. People only look at the $45 billion which is put in the renewable energy, and they make a big story out of it without knowing that we are spending $487 billion as subsidy to fossil fuel, which is causing the $5 trillion damage. So somebody said it's like putting $1 for good use, putting $10 for bad use, and causing a damage of $50 or $500.
It really does make no sense. And coming from the music industry, where all of the big companies were holding on to an old model that was crumbling underneath them at that time because the digitization and the disruption was already there, but they were holding on to something even though it didn't really make sense to hold on to it anymore. And then it took the disruptors from a different area to say, there's a new and there's a better way. And because of it, the transparency is increased. We're still in a growth phase in this, but there's a burgeoning industry around that. And so I think that some people, if you've built your whole careers around having a certain infrastructure to create that change, it's scary.
Yeah.
Certain aspects of myself, I don't want to change if I don't have to. You know, this like, I know it's good for me.
I think nobody wants to change it, so you don't have to. It's a painful process usually to change.
Yeah.
It's actually it's far more painful to stay in a painful rhythm.
Yep.
It might be short-term discomfort to change into a new and to harmonize into interconnection, but it's far more painful to stay in disconnection. And we need to not fool ourselves with that. You know, the rhythm of greed is something that, as you mentioned it in dollars, Ben, you know, I think of it energetically or kind of, you know, that in a different kind of way. But that energy of greed is the cancer that's contaminating our minds and contaminating our actions. And it's we need to be investing in that anti-cancer treatment, which is, as I keep saying yes to the moment, saying yes to life, and saying yes to the fact that we can breathe and make positive change. And that's up to each one of us. Each one of us.
I was just thinking, because it's a TV show, I don't want to name names, but I remember one of the world leaders, one of the very powerful leaders, he mentioned when Greta was speaking about the environment, she says, "You don't know the damage. I'm a leader of my country. I have to think about employment. I have to think about hunger. I have to think about joblessness and all these things. This is far more important than your environment and all these little things." And that's where what you are mentioning, Parvati, is correct, that this link is completely missing. They are just thinking about 2 days up front and that's it.
Yeah. It's like saying, I'll have this little meal today, but there'll be no food for the rest of eternity. It's like, okay, that doesn't work. That's not good leadership.
Exactly.
What would you point out? Like, what's the urgency to act now? You know, okay, a lot of ice is melting. We understand that. But how much time do we have? Why do you think we should act all urgently? Because usually people, if it's far away, they kind of, maybe my kids can act or whoever. Why us now?
Yeah.
So what's the urgency?
95% of the oldest sea ice is gone. you know, 95%. Yeah. And the urgency, I mean, if 14, like I always say to people, how fast do you think the ice is melting? And then they're like, I'm like, 14,000 tons, what, you know? And they're like, per year? I'm like, no. Per month? No. And finally I'm like, it's per second. So if that doesn't speak urgency, I don't know what does. You know, it's like, it's fairly fast. And we need to be, as I say, working faster than that.
Mm-hmm. I think on that turn, I would ask to put on the video, because I think the video shows a lot of what is happening.
Sure, I would love to. There was a video, the minute, the one that we were going to show at the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be great to conclude. That's a great recap.
In every moment, faced with the challenges in our world today, we each have a choice. Succumb to apathy and despair, or summon the courage, compassion, and ingenuity inherent to the human spirit, and bring back hope for our hurting world. This presentation is about what it looks like to not only choose courage and compassion, but to make it the path everyone can walk to a healthy, shared future. The next minute or so of information is heavy, but I promise there is positivity coming in this presentation. We're living in a world with tremendous need, and we must look at it soberly in order to take appropriate action, when literally every second counts. Why? Because every second 14,000 tons of Arctic ice melts. That's how fast we're losing our life support, with dire consequences worldwide. People on the American West Coast and Siberia and in the Amazon are watching their world literally burn away, with over 5 million acres burned this year alone. Millions across Africa and Asia are fleeing their homes due to floods, while economists and NGOs predict up to 200 million climate refugees by 2050. By the end of 2020, unrelenting heat waves and pollution will claim over 4 million lives globally. Today, close to a third of our world does not have enough to eat, with as many as 2 billion people living in water scarcity. As millions gasp for breath in a global pandemic, nature warns us that we must urgently change our ways. Aon Insurance recently reported that this last decade was the most costly ever due to natural disasters. Globally, over 4 million people die every year from deaths of despair, suicide, addiction, and overdose. A number that's proven to get worse with today's higher temperatures, natural disasters, and crop failures. We're collectively sick because we've become disconnected from ourselves, each other, and our world, yet it doesn't have to be this way. We can make a massive difference to all life on Earth with very little effort. We must act now. Our future depends on the health of the world's smallest ocean. For millions of years, the Arctic Ocean has kept our planet cool and sustained life on Earth. But now this critical ecosystem is in grave danger from the choices we've made, our direct interference in the area, and our non-sustainable lifestyle that heats the world. Scientists at Yale University warn there is 75% less Arctic sea ice in the summer than there was just 50 years ago. Where the ice once reflected half of the sun's heat back out into space, the exposed Arctic water now absorbs 90% of the heat, changing our world's air conditioner to a warming kettle. When the sea ice melts, the Arctic air warms up and so does the land. Then sea levels rise all over the planet, with the potential to displace billions this century. Scientists agree that Arctic oil must stay off limits to keep the world from heating up more than 2 degrees Celsius. Arctic sea ice has been protecting us from 148 trillion kilograms of carbon dioxide being emitted into the atmosphere. Governments and businesses around the globe seek to profit off the thought the cost of our world through activities such as oil and gas, shipping, fishing, mining, and military buildup. Large ships break up the ice and darken it so it no longer absorbs the sun's heat, further accelerating the melt, which exposes us to the thousands of years of pathogens frozen in the Arctic permafrost, with the potential for the next pandemic. These include Spanish flu, smallpox, the plague, and anthrax. For perspective, without measures like social distancing, every person who gets COVID-19 will infect an average of 2 to 3 people. COVID's case fatality rate varies, but can be as high as 7.7%. Spanish flu had a similar rate and killed more people than World War I. The plague, approximately as contagious, was the worst pandemic in human history. Its mortality rate is still at least 10%. Smallpox, twice as contagious and at least four times as deadly as COVID. And our world no longer has enough vaccine stockpiled to go around. And anthrax is so deadly it's used as a bioterrorism agent with a mortality rate that dwarfs even smallpox. And the Arctic has another danger that exponentially multiplies this risk. Arctic soil contains methane equivalent to 4 to 5 times all the CO2 we've emitted since 1850. As permafrost melts, methane seeps or erupts to leave craters like this. What happens in these explosions? Massive planetary warming. Methane is 30 times more powerful than CO2 in capturing heat. Scientists warn that the biggest potential methane release over a short period of time would do as much as $70 trillion in damage worldwide, undermining the global financial system, even if we meet the Paris climate targets. In addition, a large-scale eruption could disperse Arctic germs far and wide for a potential pandemic in what Dr. Boris Kirshengoltz of the Russian Academy of Sciences described as a catastrophe worse than Chernobyl. Pulitzer Prize-winning Harvard biologist Edward O. Wilson says we must protect half of the planet to prevent mass extinction. 14,000 scientists from almost every country have warned humanity to immediately change our ways. That's what MAPS, the Marine Arctic Peace Sanctuary, does. Not only does it safeguard our collective future by protecting this global climate linchpin, MAPS also creates the healthy global shift in mindset that sustains it. In white here is MAPS, the largest marine protected area ever at 8 million square kilometers. It's the medical mask that our world needs. It supports almost every United Nations Sustainable Development Goal. Our plan for MAPS has three key factors: government acceleration, grassroots empowerment, global activation. To realize MAPS, we need to update the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea. So we created the MAPS Treaty, translated it into the 6 official languages of the United Nations, and gave it to all 193 member states. It enters into force when 99 countries sign on. We've brought the MAPS Treaty to every conference of the parties since Paris in 2015, and will be at all the high-level United Nations conferences scheduled for 2021. As they see their country sinking, the prime ministers of Samoa and the Cook Islands have already signed the MAPS Treaty. They know we need MAPS now. Ivo de Boer, former executive secretary to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, has said, "MAPS, the Marine Arctic Peace Sanctuary, is the only sane choice for this critically vulnerable Arctic ecosystem for the sake of our seas, our atmosphere, and all life." Through our grassroots empowerment, MAPS has already become a worldwide movement with representation in 24 countries, international law in the making, 49 coalition partners, growing youth initiatives, and multiple inspiring campaigns unfolding. But grassroots activism in the United Nations take time we don't have. How do we protect all life quickly? As Albert Einstein said, a new type of thinking is essential if mankind is to survive and move toward higher levels. And that's exactly what sets us apart, and it's the reason for this presentation: to create the momentum and ensure the widespread global transformation needed to realize MAPS. We have developed GEM, Global Education for MAPS. GEM is a series of unique creative assets rolled out over 6 campaigns spanning music, books, TV, yoga, web, and events, specially developed to quickly penetrate the mass mainstream. It will secure the needed treaty signatures while sensitizing people to our inherent interconnection and the need to protect all life. MAPS supports 15 UN Sustainable Development Goals, secures 99 signatures from world leaders to change international law, keeps 148 trillion kilograms of CO2 out of the atmosphere, affects the lives of 7.8 billion people. The bottom line is this: we must change at an unprecedented speed in order to survive. And with MAPS, we can. The seconds of our lives are precious. The question is how we choose to use them. These world leaders, artists, activists, scientists, and wellness experts know we need MAPS, the Marine Arctic Peace Sanctuary, now to bring our world back from the precipice. Together we can do this. Can we count on your support?
Wow, this was amazing. It's really beautiful.
You can count on our support, absolutely.
Exactly. I was writing down comments. Have you spoken to the UN Secretary Guterres? Because he recently gave a speech on a very same line, on same wide of, line of thoughts.
Yeah, we haven't spoken, but we are using some of his quotes, and we're pursuing that relationship for sure. That's great. Absolutely. Very powerful what he said.
Exactly. And another point I wrote down is that are you aware that in 1972 there was a treaty signed? Oh, I hear noise, some kind of sound in the background. Now it's off. So there was a treaty signed by the OECD saying polluters pay principles, where every country signed, I think all the OECD countries signed that they will stop pollution and put extra charge or extra tax on pollution. But nothing, absolutely nothing was ever implemented. Aren't you afraid that also the MAPS people may sign it, but they won't take necessary actions or act on it?
Well, that's why I mentioned at the beginning that MAPS is really two things. It's the, you know, it's this geographic circle around space, but it's also the transformation in consciousness to sustain it, in our awareness to sustain it. It has to be both those things, you know, because we know that it can't just be a piece of paper that's signed. It has to be acted upon and protected in perpetuity. And I mean, legally it does. The treaty does that. We need to really create a shift in awareness and consciousness of people around the world.
Guys, I would have one more question to you, and it's more on the emotional side. So what was the most visible or emotional thing you two can share or talk of on your way? And it's for each of you.
It's a big question. There's two moments in my life that have been very big, impactful. The first one obviously was when Parvati was met by the two Inuit elders, and they were listening to nature and hearing the exact same thing. That moment for me was, oh my gosh, I knew we were interconnected, but to that level, to be able to listen to nature and realize that it is a part of us and that it's speaking to us at all times, that was a very big piece for me. The other one also was, so there were four initial members, Parvati, Vandana, myself, and Darcy. And Darcy was on his way to Nairobi to the United Nations, and was on the Boeing flight that crashed. And when we lost him, what we gained was an incredible groundswell of movement from a lot of countries in Africa, and the African youth voice. And it showed us that it's not about one individual, it's about all of us together. And that MAPS, when we were thinking of it as the Marine Arctic Peace Sanctuary and thinking it's gonna work its way top down, and it's all of a sudden it's like, it's global. And kids in Uganda or whatever that don't have much are like, we want MAPS now. Is so moving to me that it helps, it keeps me going. That inspiration from all of those countries keeps me going.
That's beautiful.
Thanks for sharing, Rishi. Thanks a lot.
For me, I think that the power of volunteering, as I mentioned earlier, sort of the incredible broad-heartedness, you know, that exists in people from all walks of life. You know, to me, that's really the real people, and that at core we're all the same. So despite status or despite culture or economics, you know, we each need food and water to survive. We need the same oxygen to breathe, and our own health depends on the health of our shared mother, you know? Mm-hmm. So for me, that's a very emotional thing. But I would even share, do I have the time to share another sort of 1 minute story, or are we
running? Absolutely, yes.
It's part of the global education strategy, and I actually don't speak about this very, very much, but it will be part of our global education strategy. When I came back from the North Pole, I ended up having an accident that caused me to be paralyzed in my spinal cord, and I was paralyzed from the waist down. And it is something that showed me that I chose to really, as I said, to listen to nature. And it was something that I was recommended to have surgery, and I was told that after surgery I would walk again, maybe 50-50 chance of walking again. And I chose instead, and I, you know, everything has its own place and its own rhythm. I chose instead to go within and to really listen. And what I saw, you know, when I went in within and listened, was I saw like a whale, you know, flat, almost flatlining. And for some reason, my intuition was that if I listened to the heartbeat of the whale, I would be shown the way to healing. And so what ended up happening over 4 months, I was totally paralyzed for the 4 months, but after around 4 months, I slowly, by listening to the heartbeat of the whale started becoming louder, and so did the healing in my body. And eventually my toes started to wiggle, and eventually movement came back to my body. And it was like being rebuilt around a whole new axis. So I think that for me, when I mentioned that I know at a very deep and physical and visceral level that when we get out of the way to allow nature to heal, that there is a tremendous force of regeneration that's available to us, and we just simply need to say yes. I'm not saying that in any kind of light way. I'm saying that from a place that's deeply emotional, deeply experiential for me, something that I've personally lived through. So I think I say that because I know that getting out of the way to allow the ice to regenerate, to heal, the planet to heal, is something we've had a glimpse at through COVID. I think we're being summoned by nature through COVID to get out of the way. And I share that because at a very deep personal level, I've had that experience in my own life about really listening, getting out of the way, and allowing a new rhythm to come up through my spine, quite literally, and so that I could be kind of reworking in this world and around a whole new axis. So, I mean, that might be, you know, deeper than some people might want to go, but it's very personal for me and very real for me, very physical for me, you know, that change. So that's all in response to my work on maps. It happened just after I came back from the North Pole. And I believe that it was part of a prayer that I made actually when I was at the top of the world, saying, you know, Mother, I know you're suffering. I know, is there anything I can do to take on? And I had that spinal injury the day that the tsunami hit Japan. You know, so there was that sense of interconnection that happened. And I just felt that I was being summoned into a different kind of relationship with myself, each other, and the world. And I just knew I needed to trust that. And in doing so, extraordinary things started to happen. A power to heal that is available to all of us. So that might be too new age for some people, but, you know, in the spirit of candor and the spirit of risk and the spirit of kind of putting yourself out there and making positive change, I share that very openly.
Wow, that's very deep, Parvati. Thanks a lot for sharing that. It's a heart. Let's go back a little bit to the cold mind, because we still have 5 minutes, and I'd really like to engage our audience to help you more, guys, and talking about philanthropists or impact investments, guys, Rishi, when you face them, what was the most difficult to convince them to help you, or why would they help you, philanthropists or impact investors? Now is your short pitch to help MAPS.
This is the most important investment in the world. We've never known a world without ice. We're talking about collateral damage in lives. So everybody that's doing something that supports moving our economy forward, even if it's reforestation, without balanced weather, the trees aren't going to take. So this is it, and we're running out of time.
Yeah, MAPS is the Arctic sea ice is the linchpin. It's a linchpin for all growth, all life on Earth. So to invest in that is literally to invest in all life on Earth. It's a baseline necessity. And so the return on investment is saving planet Earth. Lucky mm-hmm. you.
Yep. And I completely agree also to what Parvati mentioned earlier, the interconnectedness. There was a very old video of Julia Roberts. I don't know if you have seen it on Mother Earth, where she writes that I am nature.
Oh yeah, that's beautiful.
That's amazing. And it's something mm-hmm. that we really should consider. It is so small.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at even at COVID or something, so small, but impacted. I think I may be wrong, but one of my points is I think the issue is that the people who are perpetuating the damage are not the same people who are suffering. So the few who are making millions or billions by burning forests or selling products or destroying the ice or raising the global are not the ones suffering today. Maybe they will suffer tomorrow. But the people who are suffering today are the poor ones in Bangladesh.
At one level, that's true, although pain creates pain. So you can only cause pain to another person if you are in a state of pain. So by acting in a place of greed, you're in a place of pain. So you're going to be creating more pain. And that's why that's why it's so powerful to say cool minds, warm heart. That is mm-hmm. the transformation we need. Because by acting with short-term vision, you're acting in a state of vibration, a reality of pain. And you're promoting pain. You're propagating pain. And mm-hmm. this is the rhythm that we've been in for a long, long time. You know, yeah. Not sustainable, as you know. And eventually, you know, people who are creating that pain will either kind of just, you know, all kind of turn into dust and ash and whatever and disappear. But it's like, you know, that pain is going to combust, you know, and they will eventually experience pain, or they'll have a kind of awakening and recognize that they're creating pain for people, and that's not okay. It's not mm-hmm. does not support life, period. You know, it's like you either invest in cancer or you invest in the cancer treatment, right?
Yeah.
You're either investing in the cancer.
I would say invest in health, not even getting cancer, right?
Exactly.
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 We are running out of time. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Exactly. It was so amazing. And you guys both are so inspirational.
Well, thank you guys are absolutely inspirational with what you're doing. Keep going. Keep shining your amazing light. And, you know, let's light up the world.
Exactly. That's why we are also in the MAPS.
Thank you so much for your support.
Thank you. Should we play the petition video now?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, let's see how many petition signatures we can get right now.
Great.
Hi, my name is Parvati. I'm a musical artist, yogini, activist, and author with a deep love for our planet. The Arctic Ocean is the Earth's air conditioner that ensures balanced weather globally, so we have the food and resources we all need to survive. But today it's under threat as never before, as corporations and governments seek to profit off its melt. MAPS, the Marine Arctic Peace Sanctuary, is an effective and immediate response. It protects the entire Arctic Ocean north of the Arctic Circle as the largest preservation area in history. MAPS supports a global shift to sustainable energy and moves us from short-term gain to long-term good. With a single initiative, MAPS supports almost every UN Sustainable Development Goal. MAPS has become an unstoppable global movement with charities in the US, Canada, and Europe, international law in the making, 48 coalition partners, representation in 24 countries, growing youth initiatives, and multiple inspiring campaigns unfolding. We stand at a pivotal moment in human history. Together, we can transform the Earth's most vulnerable ocean into our greatest strength and literally save the world. The ice isn't waiting, and neither can we. Be part of the MAPS movement. Please sign and share the MAPS petition today at parvati.org for a healthy and safe tomorrow.
That was powerful. Everyone, you. Please go much. And sign the petition.
Well, yeah, I'm going to sign it out. I wrote it down already on my...
There are no excuses. You know, when people don't know about something, it's fine. They don't act. But once they know and they don't act, then we have a problem, right? So do mm-hmm. what you can do. This is important.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Definitely. Beautifully said. All right.
Thank you very much, guys. It was great to have you. And I hope to have you another time in our show.
We would love to. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
To see the progress, how many countries will be signing.
It's an honor to be on the first episode. I want to thank every single viewer and listener that spent their time to tune in today and be with us. Even though I cannot see you, I can feel you. So thank you so very much.
And just to give you a warning, Rishi, but this program is recorded, so it will be shown again and again around the world. People can watch it whenever they want.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Excellent.
Have a wonderful afternoon, evening, day, whatever it is. Just have a wonderful period.
Thank you. Weekend, right? We are at the weekend now, so have a wonderful weekend. And before we go to the weekend, we'd like to announce the next speakers of the week. And this will be Alina Kamenitzer, the head of Climate Office of European Investment Bank from Luxembourg. So don't miss it, guys. Join. It will be a very inspiring conversation. So join us next week. At the same time at 3:00 on Friday. Ben,
I'll just add to it that in case you guys don't know, EIB, the European Investment Bank, is the bank of European Union. It's one of the biggest banks in the world. And they have put aside an enormous amount of money for investments in climate change and climate-related businesses. And that's not only limited to European Union, but around the world. So if you want to know more about it and the criteria, how to apply for financing, everything, you're most welcome to join.
Great.
Bye-bye from now.
Act and impact. See you next week.
See you next week. Bye-bye.
Hi, it's Sveta and Ben, the world's number one impact investing expert. I have been educating thousands of people on the topic, how can you use finance as a force for good?
And I have been helping hundreds of entrepreneurs all around the world to set up, run and establish their companies and businesses.
Do you even know what is impact investing and how can you get engaged in that?
Did you know that in the coming years, we are going to lose 26 trillion of our GDP due to the climate change? But on the other hand, are you also aware of all the opportunities that the sector has to offer?
Are you aware of changing policies and businesses which already impact every little part of your life?
To have the answer to all these questions, come and join us at Swiss Impact with Banerjee's on every Friday afternoon, 3:00 Swiss time, starting from 15 January.
We will be interviewing thought leaders, world leaders, policymakers, investors, businesses, which are already engaged in this sector. So see you on Friday.
See you on Friday.